Mike O'Mara, Radio Entertainment.
Hicks, Nicks, Sticks, Picks, a podcast about Rob's movies with your hosts, Rob Spuak and Josh Sroka. And now, ladies and gentlemen, let the show begin.
Thank you, AI guy. And welcome back to the third episode. Is it a welcome back? I guess if they've listened to the first two. So welcome back to Hicks, Nicks, Sticks, Picks. First of all, before we get into today's movie, and I hope you've watched it, The Natural. Josh,
I did.
No, I was speaking more to the listeners, but I'm glad you did too. That shows you care.
Yes.
Cares desperately. But you did play a rather nasty trick on me before the show.
Nasty's quite the
Well, I guess adjective. Nasty. It was unexpected, and it was a screaming success on your part.
It is 3:07 as we record.
Right.
And we did tell Mike to be here at 3:00.
Right. And he was very enthusiastic about it 8 days ago.
Right.
But on today's show, not really excited. No. Right.
So I knew he wasn't going to come. So I just took a screenshot of him from today's The Mike O'Mara Show. And I had it sitting in here ready to go as if he was the third chair.
And I clicked in, and not only was Mike there, but he was making the face that I thought he'd make if he was on this podcast.
You know what this is? This face that Mike's making right now.
Yeah.
It's the Jesus over your shoulder, like Jesus sees everything type
exactly.
face. This is the Mike is watching.
Mike is watching. But anyway, you did fool me. Mike is not with us today. But if you are perhaps joining us from outside the O'Mara Nation, know that Mike is the host of the Mothership podcast that we do, the Mike O'Mara Show, and he threatened to join us. He did not.
Make sure you let Mike know how much you like Hicks, Nicks, Sticks, Picks.
Yes, please do. I'm sure he'll
send him messages.
He'll love it. He will absolutely love it. Okay, so today's movie, we announced it last week. We both watched it. Hope you watched it too. It's The Natural. It's from 1984. And did you know it was the... Did you know I did not hook my soundboard up to my board? So give me just one moment. Josh, did you know that? What's that?
Well, I'll say while you get that set, I'll say I hope it doesn't take a person dying to push some of these movies out to me, because this is one where, as a diehard baseball fan, I've known about The Natural forever. I know the classic scene of Chattering the Lights.
Yeah,
I am ashamed that it has taken me this long to watch The Natural.
I was shocked because I know it's a movie that's almost 41 years old now.
Yes.
It shocked me that you hadn't seen it. And by the way, congratulations to us, our first episode of this podcast in color, because the movie's in color.
It is.
And that's what we decided to do last week. Yeah. I was shocked you hadn't seen it, but I was very pleased that you hadn't seen it.
Well,
because I wanted to share it with you. Yeah.
It's also because baseball is such a comfort to me. It's hard to get me to watch a new baseball movie, because it's way easier for me to watch Field of Dreams for the 100th time. Or if I want to laugh, throw on Major League or The Sandlot.
Right.
There's good classic baseball movies already. And I know everyone says this one's the best, but why experience something new when I have the comfort?
There's an amazing amount of overlap between you and I on that. I sometimes would rather watch a rerun of something I know I love than try something new. My family loves it. But anyway, today we are discussing The Natural. Much better with the audio going through the board.
Who wrote this score?
Do I? Randy Newman.
Yeah, I didn't know. I was impressed by that.
Well, I have a story about it later on.
Okay. All right.
This was the first movie released by TriStar Pictures, they're a big deal now, and this was the one that they went out on. The cast is amazing. I mean, really, really strikingly amazing. Robert Redford, of course, plays Roy Hobbs, our lead actor. Robert Duvall is Max Mercy. Glenn Close is Iris Gaines. Kim Basinger, pre-Batman, as Memo Paris. Wilford Brimley is Pop Fisher.
He's the best manager.
Oh, my God. You love that character. Oh, he's so good. And he's probably, based on Wilford Brimley's scope of age, he's probably like 30 when he made this movie. But he looks 70.
It was perfect. It was, okay, yeah, you're the same guy from Cocoon.
Exactly.
I can line this up, that you retired out to a farm.
Barbara Hershey played Harriet Byrd. We learn about her in the movie. Robert Prosky as the judge. Richard Farnsworth as the assistant manager, Red Blow. Joe Don Baker, known only as the Whammer, but obviously Babe Ruth. I mean, just clearly.
Yeah. Oh, 100%.
Yeah. And then Bat Boy Bobby Savoy was played by a guy named George Wilkos. It's the only movie he ever made.
I love the Bat Boy, too.
Oh, my favorite. And the Gus Sands was played by Darren McGavin, who was not credited on the movie because he came into shooting late and he would have to take a lower position on the credits if they added it. So he just had himself left out and probably got more attention for being uncredited. It was based on a 1952 novel called The Natural by Bernard Malamud. And it was directed by Barry Levinson, who's directed everything. Rain Man, Tootsie, Good Morning Vietnam, Wag the Dog, Diner. He's just an amazing, amazing director. So before we go into a plot recap, I'm curious, what is your initial thoughts as you press play on this?
Yeah.
You've already picked out two things that we totally agree on, is the characters of Pop and the character of the Bat Boy. They're both sensational.
Well, yeah, no, those are the best characters in the whole thing.
Uh-huh.
Are those two characters.
I agree.
Even Roy Hobbs is fine. He's that stoic hero baseball player. It's Pop and the Bat Boy, who I didn't know the Bat Boy's name, but he was wonderful.
And Bobby.
Bobby, I kept thinking of you as the Bat Boy.
Well, I appreciate that. You know, I think when I saw the movie first, I imagined myself as the Bat Boy.
I think so.
But it's Bobby Savoy. That's why his bat is called the Savoy Special.
Yes, I knew the okay. bat was named after him. I got that much, but not full context.
It's hard, again, I think, for Redford's... I think it's hard for Redford's character to be the most dynamic and likable and best character because very little is revealed about him through most of the movie. I mean, right. He's a good guy, he's a good baseball player, but his past is mysterious. So
it gave me a lot of kind of Casey at the Bat feeling, yeah. mm-hmm. where it's like this hero guy who goes up and can get the big hit. And I feel like I want to know more of Roy Hobbs. There's those 16 years where we don't know nothing.
Exactly. He did play for a Hebrew baseball team. We know that. But that's the only thing we know.
We kind of know why he doesn't pitch anymore.
Mm-hmm.
But really, is that what's holding you back?
Well,
you can hit, but you can't pitch.
Let's go through the plot. So for people that did not watch, we can sort of get through this. It is a very complicated plot we'll talk about the structure of it.
I've got moments written down that shocked me.
Okay.
I'm like, this is in the movie?
So we meet Roy Hobbs. He's on a train. He's reflecting on his childhood. He was a baseball prodigy, an amazing pitcher. His father encouraged him, but his father sadly passed away under a tree. And he lost his dad. And later on, that very tree was hit by a lightning bolt.
Okay.
Okay.
Did we need the scene of his dad passing away, having like a heart attack or something out at the tree?
It's referenced
one other time in the movie.
It's very briefly. Superman-ish for me. The fact that, you know, Clark Kent lost his dad and went on to, be Superman, right. and he's great. I think that it is necessary for building the story, but also, I'll say it now, I think there is so much exposition to accept when you're watching this movie to get to the current day.
Yeah. That was the first thing I wrote down with a little WTF, like, what? This doesn't need to be here.
I know. And it's, the movie It's a Wonderful Life, the Christmas movie, doesn't come up to the current day until like over an hour, 10 minutes into the film. Because it's all setting up what's going to happen. I don't mind the construction.
But this is how the movie started.
I think the exposition is too heavy in this. There's so much going on. There's almost enough for three movies in it. Now, they do a great job of weaving it together, but there's certainly a lot. So that tree that got hit by lightning, he gets a piece of wood from it and makes his bat, his magical bat, Wonder Boy, with the lightning bolt on it that he carries around in what looks like a trombone case.
It is a trombone case.
Is that what it is? Okay,
yes,
good.
It is.
And he gets a call that he's going to get called up to try out for the Cubs. And so he's on a train to Chicago, but sadly that means he has to leave his girlfriend Iris behind. Now, a weird turn that is easily missed is while they're on the train, they reveal that there is like a serial killer or a killing spree of someone who is killing all the best athletes in their field. So like the best football player was shot, an Olympian was shot. And they're there on the train, also on the plane, on the train with him is ostensibly Babe Ruth, but he's called the Whammer. And he's regarded as the best player of all time at that point. So they stop, I guess, at like a county fair. It must be like a train depot station.
I was going to ask you, was that normal back then? Like when the has to reload or something? Hey, there's a fair set up here.
I don't know. It doesn't seem right. But again, it's very important because...
Oh, and it's 1930. So they didn't have like a shopping mall. Like, hey, that's here, true. We'll stop at the food court. So
yeah, exactly.
Maybe this was a real thing.
Maybe it was an all year round fair. But they go in and... There is a guy that's sort of like representing Roy Hobbs, and he says, this guy can strike out the Whammer, no problem. And the Whammer says, no way. And they go and they have a bet, and he does it. He nails him in three pitches. And therefore, he is now, Roy Hobbs, the best player in the world. So the lady that was going to shoot Babe
Ruth,
because that's how it works, because the lady that was stalking Babe Ruth, the Whammer, to kill him, now sees that Roy Hobbs is better, so she shoots him. And then commit suicide.
Oh, yeah, because you can't go back to your boss and say, all right, I was going to shoot the guy you said was the best baseball player, but I found one better, so I shot him instead.
Shot him instead. You really need to shoot both and hope for extra credit. So time passes. It is 1939, and he shows up at the home or the ballpark of the New York Knights, who are not a very good baseball team.
Right. Now, he got signed, and we don't really have the backstory of why he was signed.
Right.
He was an older guy, and they thought it was kind of like a major league type feel where they're trying to blow the season so they can buy it cheaper.
Right. And the scout did sign a contract, but Pop, the awesome manager played by Wilfred Brimley, says they can sign him. I can pay him, but he's not going to play. We're not going to let him play. And of course, this drives Hobbs crazy because he's there to play. So after all of this, they say, okay, well, at least tomorrow we'll let you come out and do batting practice with us. And after everyone else hits, Hobbs steps up, and he has a pretty good first impression for batting practice.
I love the audio on the scene.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that. The sound design in that
so
is
good.
Is amazing. And I mean, you don't normally get to hear a bat like that in an empty ballpark, but the sound design of that, and also, although not in that clip, when the ball lands in empty bleachers, it's fantastic.
The sound is perfect.
It is. And I love the crack of the bat. It's maybe the best capture of it in a movie I've ever seen. It's just great. Boy. Here comes the manager.
Let me see
Pop.
That bat.
Not bad, kid.
Where'd you get this?
I made it myself from a tree near home.
Wonder Boy. Put that on there? What does it mean?
I made it a long time ago when I was a kid. I wanted it to be a very special bat.
How about this? This lightning bolt.
The tree that I made it from was split open by lightning.
I don't figure this. All those
because the story makes no sense.
I know.
Well, I sort of got sidetracked.
I love the phrase, I don't figure this, because the very fact that the manager's not buying it, it kind of invests a little suspension of disbelief for the viewer.
Yeah.
Because if they don't believe it, why should we believe it?
Right. Right. Because you're looking at it, you're like, well, that bat's perfect. You're telling me you made that
and
it's weighted properly.
Don't forget,
as a kid or as an adult,
he had it boned so it wouldn't chip.
Yeah,
is that a thing? Boning a bat?
I thought he was saying bonded.
I think he said boned, like bone china. I could be wrong, but in any case, he the bat means a lot to him. So he is obviously a great player. And the next day, there is a little bit of a scuffle.
I have an answer for you.
Ah, please, let me have the answer.
Boning a bat is when a player rubs the surface of the wooden bat with a hard, smooth object, like a cow bone, to smooth it out.
Wow.
It compresses the wood fibers and tightens the grain and smooths out the surface to make it more durable, perform better, and it's part of a baseball tradition.
So that's very
a new
cool.
one for me.
Okay, and now
I'll
you know.
Be boning a bat later.
Well, let's not take that out of context. The next day, there is a game. There's a little scuffle between the manager and one of the players, and they put Roy in to swing the bat for the first time in the majors in his life.
So the ball has came apart.
The thing they said to him when he was about to take his swing is knock the cover off the ball, yes. Roy, and he does. And it's very entertaining because they try to tag him out with essentially a handful of string, and they can't do that.
Right. It becomes a cartoon.
Yeah, and it's also impossible. It couldn't happen. I know that,
you don't know how baseballs were made in 1930.
Here's the most impressive story I know is that Ted Williams, that he would hit the ball so hard you could sometimes smell smoke. That he asked Sammy Sosa about that when Sammy was, breaking the record. And they shared that you could actually smell some sort of smoke or, friction from the hit. But he's quite a baseball player, and he is a new sensation, talk of the town. But again, no one knows where he comes from. They admire him on the team. They ask him about the Wonder Boy bat and the lightning bolt. They're so into it that they actually incorporate a lightning bolt onto their uniforms, which I love because I'm a lightning bolt guy on my tattoo right here that you can't see. But I enjoyed that.
Well, because the one kid does it and he has a good game.
Exactly.
And so then they all get on board.
Exactly.
And that is perfect because it's perfect for baseball. Because baseball is probably the most superstitious out of any sport.
I thought it would be. I wanted to ask you about that. But it's at this point that we learned that Pop, the great manager, he went through some financial trouble and sold part interest in the team to a guy called the Judge. And the deal is he can buy the team back from the Judge if he wins the pennant. But it's not looking like it's going to happen. However, they start winning. They really turn their season around. And at that point, the Judge calls Hobbs into his office and kind of asks him, I think he doesn't really ask him to cheat yet, but he implies that, sometimes if you don't win, it's even better. And yeah. Hobbs has not anything to do with that. So he shuts it down. Then he's introduced to a powerful bookie named, I believe, Gus, and he learns what betting on baseball is like. He's shocked that people can bet against things or even bet on single players. He didn't know how it all worked out. He starts a romance with Pop's niece. Her name is oddly Memo Paris, and she's bad news, but we don't know to what extent yet. So now Roy's in love with Memo. They start dropping games.
She's bad luck.
She is bad luck.
And it's showing in his game.
Mm-hmm. And then he's starting to feel that she's bad luck. And then he's at the game, and do you remember the girlfriend he left behind, Iris?
Iris, yes.
She shows up to one of the games, and this is, I think, one of not only my favorite moment in the movie visually, I think it stands up against almost any movie when he spots her in the stands. The way they use natural sunlight to make her glow.
And it's perfect how he doesn't step out of the box and go say, did I see that?
Right.
It's soft.
Yep. Oh, it's just beautiful. They didn't need that clock anyway. Obviously having Glenn Close back in his life has helps him. Iris is there. He has a good game. He gets with her, and he finally sort of talks about his past with her, and his hitting's on fire.
But we still don't know.
No, we
they
don't.
Figured that out.
That's
it's
right.
It's clear that he has told her about the whole past and where he's been for 16 years and
right.
since he left that farm, but we have no clue still as the viewer.
And since he is not taking any of the bribes to throw the game, what's the next most possible thing to do? You poison Roy. And they do. They poison Roy to get him to not play. while he's in the hospital from recovering from being poisoned, they put him in the maternity hospital so he's not discoverable. They find a bullet in his stomach that apparently has been eating away at his stomach for the last 16 years. Now,
a
the problem
bullet, which is what they talked about at the beginning, that all the athletes were being killed with a silver bullet.
I have a problem with that because a silver bullet is...
they're not vampires?
No. It's a pure metal. Silver is a pure metal. If it had been like a copper or a lead bullet, then he might have had some trouble. I don't think silver is that abrasive to the body. I could be wrong. But that's the reason why...
No, I think silver can like poison you.
Oh, well... But
like a pure silver.
The original thought behind the Lone Ranger using a silver bullet is that it wouldn't necessarily kill the villain because of the purity of the silver. I could be wrong. I didn't mean to bring up the Lone Ranger today.
I'm not a doctor, so I don't know.
So Roy gets visited in the hospital again by the creepy judge, who offers him $20,000 to throw the last game of the season. And just so you know, in 1939, that would be like being offered $464,000 today to throw the game. And he still says no. Now, at this point, Max Mercy, the journalist that's been chasing him throughout the movie, he's found out about the shooting and the suicide. He approaches Iris, and she's not fazed by it. In fact, she encourages Roy to play the next day, even though the doctor said it could kill him, which in the course of the movie is, it seems perfect for the plot, but as you look back on it, it's a little dramatic.
Well, she knows the stakes.
Yeah.
She knows how big a deal it is.
Yeah. So he gets in, he suits up, they start to play kind of lackluster. They're, I guess, down by two.
Well, they're not playing. It's not that they're playing lackluster. The pitcher is just grooving them over the plate.
Yeah.
The pitcher is just letting them hit it.
And we find out in this scene that the pitcher is on the take from the judge. So he's actually throwing the game. That was another issue they had to work with. But apparently,
Do you have that clip? All right. Because that clip bothered me, that scene. Because yeah. Pops acts like it was no big deal.
Well, also,
like he doesn't even hear what Roy is telling him.
And also, when Pops yells at you, all of a sudden you don't cheat anymore. That's what fixed it.
Right.
But we're in the fairy tale section of the movie, and that's good. He figures out that the pitcher is cheating. He fixes that. He gets a note passed to him from Iris that she is there with her son that she's mentioned before.
Right.
But she sends a note that says, guess what, Roy? It's our son. Right. Our son is here.
Well, that's the assumption. They don't show the note.
No, but that's what goes on there.
The assumption is that this kid was conceived that last night on the farm before
exactly.
he left.
Exactly. So Roy goes up to take his final swing there. He's actually bleeding out of his jersey because he's in bad shape. But he's got to win this game. And takes out the lighting grid in the whole stadium. Question for you, since you are more electronically inclined than me. I know a baseball could definitely break a light and make some sparks fly.
Well, and I don't know 1930s electric. So okay. Maybe back then you could do this. But no, there's no reason that there shouldn't be a fuse that goes from like lamppost to lamppost
and
to
also,
cause fireworks.
Light bulbs don't explode into fireworks. Exactly. It's like a billion Roman candles.
And not one at a time to make sure it goes for 10 minutes.
But you have to admit, it's a beautiful scene.
It's an
gorgeous
awesome scene.
And then what I love is after they realize they've won the game and, you know, so many happy results from that, they show the ball continuing to fly into space. And where does it land? But in the glove of Roy Hobbs and his son playing catch back in Nebraska.
Well,
being
it's a transition.
Watched.
It doesn't really land in there.
No, well, I mean, you know what I mean.
Yeah.
But that's how they do the dissolve and the transition. And Iris is there. So we are to assume that Roy Hobbs married the girl back home, was able to raise his kid. And then as a nice final touch, they bring up the card that says the end, but the end is in the classic 1930s Paramount style that Paramount Pictures would use for the end. One final nod to the classic era of movies that this show sort of celebrates.
And
this
it's
movie.
Closure Celebrate. On the, and it's closure on the very beginning because baseball is so much a father and son sport that it starts at the beginning with Roy playing with his dad and ends with Roy with his son.
And we have to think that it's like the same field. You know, they went back. He's playing where
he's
came
back at
from.
The farm.
Exactly. You brought up, now we can talk about a few things. You brought up the music. The first thing that I wanted to talk about actually
it's great.
Was the music. The movie came out in 1984, which means I was 13. And when I saw it, I had to get the soundtrack based on this song that they have. There's some amazing montages of the team playing good and the team playing bad. This is my favorite montage. This is when they're first starting to hit. And Randy Newman wrote this. And the reason I loved it so much, it has a feel of a record that came out in 1937. So, you know, just like 18 months away from when this movie was set, to me, it suggested this Benny Goodman song. So I went to, I'll tell you where I went, Tyson's Corner, Variety Records, and I bought this LP because they didn't do CDs then, Josh. So I bought the LP.
Familiar.
Yeah. And on the back, it says, oh, there's a song called Winning. That must be it. I was very disappointed after dropping $10 on an album when I got home. Winning is only a minute six.
Oh, because it's only what they needed for the movie.
Exactly. But it is piece of great music.
But bring that LP back up.
Okay.
Let me see that again.
Yeah.
Tell me that you can tell that's a baseball movie.
You can't.
There is nothing on that cover. There's not even a piece of baseball equipment.
No, and you know what? On the back either.
No, there's nothing.
I wouldn't have thought about that.
There's no baseball.
Wow.
Because baseball, he's telling a story that just takes place around baseball.
I guess you're right. Yeah, I didn't think about that. But yeah, I still have the LP. Now, the guy who did it, Randy Newman, do you know the song Short People?
I do not.
Do you
know
this?
All I know from Randy Newman is the Toy Story. So.
Okay, and he did that. But you know, I bet you know another one from him because it's in The Naked Gun, the song I Love LA when they're in the stadium. That's a Randy Newman song.
Okay.
And he comes from musical royalty. His uncle was Alfred Newman, who wrote the actual music for the 20th Century Fox logo. He was like the king of 20th Century Fox music, and the soundstage at Fox now is named for him. So Randy Newman has got a tremendous heritage. You liked the music, okay?
Oh, no, the music was excellent.
Yeah, I thought it was very evocative without getting in the way. I think sometimes a soundtrack, especially for a period piece, if it's screaming what era you're in, it's distracting.
Yes.
And another Redford movie, The Sting, that was set in the 30s, I guess, they used music from the 1890s, ragtime piano, that actually fit the film well, even though it didn't work chronologically.
And that makes more sense to have. Yeah. And that makes more sense to have music they already had.
Yeah.
Back then. No, I thought as far as this movie taking place in the 30s, everything looked great in timing wise. The music fit, the locations fit, the stadiums fit, the equipment fit, uniforms.
I have a running problem with period piece films is that when they show cars, they all look pristine because when you rent an old car, it's been restored. This movie has dirty cars in it. That to me is a great piece of period flavor. It may seem small, but it's something that annoys me. The look of the movie, particularly in the flashback sequences, the way they use sunlight, It is maybe the most black and white looking color film that I've ever seen. It looks faded. It looks older. The colors get richer as he gets back to 1939, but I think the colorations, especially in those opening scenes, like at the when the Whammer is at the county fair, it's really, I don't want to say surreal, but it has like a almost like a heaven-like quality to it, an ethereal quality that you know you're in the past, way in the past.
Yeah.
Without it. I love the lighting.
And that's how I felt about the stadium. Like, it was old, it was run down, it wasn't a stadium a good club would have. And I had to look it up. And that stadium was built in the 30s. And then it was 50 years later when they're making it, so it was run down. So they picked it up a little bit, but they kept that rundown look because it fits.
You know, comfort is personal. For me, comfort is crawling into bed at the end of a long day and knowing I'm going to wake up feeling good. Not sore, not sweaty, just rested. That's why I love what Avocado Green Mattress is doing. Their eco-organic mattress is their most affordable option. But here's the thing. It doesn't cut corners. It's a hybrid latex mattress with the perfect medium firmness, soft, supportive, and designed to last. You'll feel just as good getting into it as you do getting out of it. And here's something I really appreciate. Avocado owns their own springs, wool, and latex supply, so they pass the savings on to you. That means you get healthier, organic sleep at a surprisingly affordable price without compromise. Plus, it's sustainably made with trusted certifications that prove it's better for you and the planet. That's real peace of mind. So head to avocadogreenmattress.com today and save up to 20% on Avocado's certified organic mattresses. Avocado. Dream of better.
So well.
As someone who loves baseball, as you do, and you really do love baseball, I love that. That's one of the reasons this is so fun to talk about this with you. Do you buy that as a major league park in 1939?
Yeah, like, I mean, I wasn't around then.
But I know, but you know the history of the game.
No, it looks beautiful. It looks like what I expect as a 1930s. I love the look of the crowd in this stadium. Where
me
it's packed,
too. Yeah.
But they're all in their business attire.
Yeah, hats. Everyone in a hat. I love it.
Everyone's in a hat.
Now, another thing.
Not a baseball cap.
While we're talking about the lighting, the weird thing in this movie is that Robert Redford was already older than Roy Hobbs, as old Roy Hobbs when he made it. He was 47 when he made this movie, Redford was. And when we first see him, he is 19, and then we see him again when he's 35. But when he's 19, back at home in Nebraska, they don't use excessive makeup or anything to make him look young. They do it with lighting, but also the way Redford handles himself. He feels younger. There's no real tight close-ups of his face.
Right.
But the way he stands and the way he moves and the fact that...
That would be why it's a lot of side shots then.
Yeah, exactly.
It's a lot of profile of his face.
Yeah, and I think it works really, really well. I'd hate to see them... like do an Irishman thing and de-age Robert Redford. I think that obviously they didn't have the technology then or try to do makeup, but I think that was pretty effective. I already mentioned the music.
Or even just a double. They could have easily had a double do that or another actor play young.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but he's great. The scene in the dark with the judge, two things I'll say about that scene in the dark and also the scene where the Whammer strikes out. The Whammer strikes out at sundown, which is just not the most subtle thing that, of course, it's the end of his career. Yeah.
Yes.
But it's so beautifully done. And I went back and watched it. They gradually bring in the sundown. It's not like a harsh light thing. It's a really nice progression. And then the judge in the dark is keeping everybody in the dark. There's so much symbolism as you go deeper into it that makes it a lot of fun to watch. Now, were you bothered when the Whammer called his shot a la Babe Ruth before his strikeout?
No, because it painted the picture that he is Babe Ruth.
True.
We're not going to say it's Babe, but it's Babe.
Right, exactly.
And I think I felt that from the moment you saw him on the train car and how he was handling himself there. I'm like, oh, it's Babe.
Yeah. If it was really Babe, he probably would have had like 60 hot dogs. But other than that, it was pretty good, I think. Also, we talked about it, the Bat Boy... Bobby is the weird thing. And I had the same reaction when I watched Stranger Things, that the kids in Stranger Things look and act like kids in the 1980s. They're not like professional kids, right?
No, it took me back to even the 80s where I'm like, remember when Bat Boys used to be boys?
Yeah.
Like, it felt right.
He looked, you know, he looked like a kid in the 1930s. He had an innocence about him. And the way he would look at Hobbs with his eyes, with the absolute, that's like one of the backbones of the movie to me, is that just adulation that he has for him.
All right.
Because we don't know Bobby's backstory, but it's very good performance by him.
Yeah. So after years of this movie being set up for me, I did write down a few things that shock me as the movie goes on.
Okay, please,
because
go ahead.
Picture has been painted as this is the greatest baseball movie ever. Okay. Tell me, well, first, obviously, is him getting shot on the train. Because that's right. Like, wait, what? That comes out of nowhere. What does this have to do with this story?
Very, very surprising. The whole, yeah, again, that leads to me too much exposition.
Yeah,
there's so much
setting up. Yeah, it was not necessary.
Yeah.
Except to build to, like, this greater picture. But then...
I guess
set up that, did he go to prison for 16 years? Did he get...
I don't think he did. Because it was... Remember, they said the woman was suicide. So, but it was still... He was found in the presence of a shady lady, and that would ruin his reputation.
He said it was suicide, not the other guy. So I thought that he was already like locked up for 15 years or something for this.
Could be. It's never explained. I like the notion that he just, you know, as he said, hopped around and played occasional baseball here and there and did it. Whether he's in prison, I can't answer that.
Well, no, he didn't hop around and play baseball. He didn't play again until this.
Well, you know, he had done some minor league stuff, he said. But when he came up to the Knights, he said he had just finished. So he didn't play a lot of baseball because they would have spotted him. But obviously, at least leading up to this, because he had to be spotted by the talent coach.
That's why I thought he was brought on purposely to screw the team, as here's an old washed up guy.
I don't know. I hadn't even thought about that.
Because,
and I suppose
the way he hits the ball.
Yeah.
That would have been presented when he got added to the team to say, hey, this guy can crush the ball.
So instead, they just added him as washed up guy.
This is an old guy.
Okay, I see that.
And an old rookie.
I'd buy that. I would buy that.
So, but the next shocking thing is Bump Bailey, the star player, the star right fielder who happens to be in the position that the only position that Roy can play.
Exactly.
He runs into a wall, and that happens still now, where you run into the wall and you get hurt.
Yeah.
But he dies.
He dies, and they have a news. That's another thing that is really clever in this movie, the accuracy of how they made the fake newsreels covering the news of the day.
It looked great, but he dies from running through the wall.
And they dump his ashes on the field.
And the next day, they dump his ashes from an airplane flying over.
I love it. I thought it was great. I mean, that
is good. It made me laugh.
But
it was just one of those, like, what am I watching?
You do not expect it. That's certainly. What else affected you as you were watching it? After we're done mourning Bump Bailey now.
The national anthem.
Okay.
Because you can't have a baseball movie without the national anthem.
Okay.
It's part of baseball.
Mm-hmm.
And that brings me to, I want to share a story about the national anthem in movies.
Okay, great.
Because do you remember the movie 42 that came out many years ago, Jackie Robinson?
I loved it. Yeah, it was a good movie.
It was a great movie. So it's a baseball movie, which means I'm going to the theaters to see it with my dad and my brother.
Okay.
And that's what you do. And you have a tradition as Oriole fans that you yell the O during the national anthem.
Yes.
So there is the national anthem in Jackie Robinson, like any other baseball movie.
Right.
So there's some murmuring between the three of us, like, hey, do we yell the O? We're in a movie theater. But it is baseball.
I love that you're planning ahead.
Yeah. This conversation, because we see it coming.
That's great.
Now, Matt and I and my dad are sitting there, and Matt and I are like, maybe so.
Okay.
And we're saying, all right, we're going to do it. And they start the national anthem. And the one... You already know we're going to be the only three people in this movie theater to yell the O.
Of course. Yeah.
But there's a big mistake you can make with the O.
What's that?
And that is timing. If you yell O at the wrong line, at the wrong spot.
It's supposed to be on the
on
second,
the
towards the end.
Does that.
Yeah.
And I guess my dad was a little excited.
Oh, no.
Because he yelled O like a verse early. And Matt and I could not stop laughing for the rest of the movie. All we did was laugh the rest of the movie at thinking that we're in this crowded movie theater at, I believe it was Annapolis Mall at the time. and crowded theater, one guy yells "Oh!" at the top of his lungs at the wrong part of the song.
And he wasn't escorted out. I think that's great.
It made us all laugh.
Yeah.
Entire movie. So just seeing the national anthem brought me into that.
Did you say when the national anthem was sung in the movie? Just out of habit?
Not when I was all by myself.
I would think you would.
No, because I live in Florida now, I've gotten out of the habit.
Oh, okay.
Because I'm generally the only guy.
How do you feel about, like, if you're at a Commanders game, say? I know you're not a big Washington Commanders fan, but they yell during the anthem as well.
It is weird for me to hear the national anthem in Florida without the O being yelled.
Yeah.
Because I'm so used to it at sporting events, school events.
Right.
At anything. So it's odd for me still. So I also marked down when he goes into pitch. We only see him pitch one pitch
right
during that batting practice. But I wanted a whole movie of Roy Hobbs as the pitcher because he nailed the windup and the huge leg kick, like a Jim Palmer-ish leg kick. That was so perfect for that time and to impress all those players.
I loved it. And, you know, I guess we don't even have to go into how great all the acting is in this movie. There is really not a weak performance in it. I couldn't come up with one if you asked me.
No, a little, very good. Like the baseball looked like baseball, except for some of the clowning around of fumbling the ball in the outfield.
Right.
Where it just was amateurish.
But they are the New York Knights. So you know what you have to expect. When you're watching Redford play as Hobbs and you are a baseball purist and an aficionado, do you buy him as a baseball player? Is his form right? Does he bat right? Does he throw the ball? You already said,
like I said,
his
the windup was
great.
So impressive.
Great.
They definitely brought in professional baseball players to work with him.
Okay.
He had the right approach at the plate. It looked really good.
Sometimes it looked like when he was, it looked like the ball just didn't have enough on it. Maybe he had the form and not the power behind it.
Sure he didn't have the power.
Yeah.
Yes.
But his form looked great.
Yes.
And also, what was your take? This has a story behind it too. The uniforms for the New York Knights.
I loved the uniforms. The uniforms were so set in, looks like uniforms I see when I go to Cooperstown.
Yeah.
With the wool, the thick wool, it was perfect. The other thing they did right is they played one away game, I believe, in it.
Uh-huh.
And it was against the Cubs. And they made it look like old Wrigley, which was awesome looking.
I think they did some of that in post-production, but they did a really good job of making it look like Wrigley. The hats, the New York Knights hats.
Yes, the old style.
There is a hat company, I bet you know it. It's called Cooperstown Ball Caps.
Yes.
And they make the best, you know, recreation of Major League hats you can get, including classic ones. And I bought a New York Knights hat, and it was beautiful. But it had that weird 1930s fit.
Yeah. Yes.
And I tended to look like a cartoon character. So
it looks almost...
I believe I donated it.
Yeah, it doesn't fit anyone's head properly.
No, you look like a goofball. But I guess if you're on a full team back in 1939, it looks okay. But the whole look of the team and all of that. And also, kudos for the Glenn Close character, Iris. She looked like a pretty girl would look in 1939. They didn't try to modernize her and make her seem like out of place. If you watch movies in the 1930s, that's the way actresses would look. And I think they did a great job with that.
And they used color. She always wore white.
Yes.
The other girls wore black.
Mm-hmm.
So they tried to separate apart that way. There's a scene when they're at dinner, when they're talking about throwing a game.
Right.
And when they're talking about betting on baseball and how everyone bets on baseball, I don't know why that's not a DraftKings ad. They need to just license that scene of the movie and start using it to market betting on baseball because I wanted to go throw some money down.
It does. It makes you want to do it. It really, really does.
Because it's you can bet on each pitch. You can bet on the swing. You can bet on everything that happens in that game, which is exactly what you do now with these apps.
Exactly. But they didn't have cell phones then. It would take forever to use a rotary phone to do that. We're going to take a short break here. And when we come back, we'll talk about things, if any, that we had problems with in this movie. And we will rate the movie and also reveal next week's movie. And Josh, I'll give you a hint. It's under 70 minutes long.
It's about time.
You're going to love that.
The Natural was pretty short.
The Natural was 2 hours and change, but you know, it really does fly by.
It did.
Yeah. All right. So we are back in a little bit. It's Hicks, Nicks, Sticks, Picks with Rob and Josh, and we're talking about The Natural. There it is, that really short song, Josh. The one that made me buy an entire LP.
We can let the whole thing play.
But actually, the whole LP is quite listenable. It's a great, great score. Hicks, Nicks, Sticks, Picks. We're talking about The Natural. Great baseball movie. And I don't know that we even mentioned it up front. It was chosen because of the recent passing of Robert Redford. And he's made so many great movies, and this is certainly one of the best. He's so eminently watchable. You said something very entertaining during the Mike O'Mara show this week. You said, no one told me Robert Redford was a great actor. Now, I know you were joking.
I was joking.
But he is really great in this. And just, you know, he's also said on the show, relatively handsome as well. He doesn't hand out the smiles a lot in this movie. And because of that, when you see Roy Hobbs smile for some reason, it carries more weight.
It does.
I like the character. Even though it is really wrapped in mystery, we don't know much about Hobbs at all.
And that's my biggest frustration with this movie is that I want more Roy Hobbs. I thought about this. Whenever we look at these classic movies, I look at, well, why haven't they remade it?
Yeah.
Because they do so many of these stupid remakes now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I don't want them to remake this. But if they want to take Roy Hobbs and make a miniseries or a show about Roy Hobbs where we get way more depth, I'd be all in for that.
I would love to know what happened during that 15 years. It's funny you brought it up. I had never really thought about those. 16 years, forgive me. But yeah, he is. But the movie has almost a fantasy fairy tale aura about it.
It does. Now,
and not in a bad way. I buy it. I buy it 100%.
You mentioned it was based on a novel. Do you know how the novel ends?
No.
Because it does not end with him hitting the lights.
What is
it? It does not end with the firework display and all this.
What happens?
The happy ending. He strikes out and he goes home in misery.
That's it?
Yeah, that's horrible.
That's horrible.
Exactly. Well, it brings more back to that whole Casey at the bat feel.
Yeah, but it's still horrible.
It's
that's
a horrible
not what you
ending.
Want. No. Especially with the feeling of this movie all the way through and the very slight, you start to suspend disbelief up front so that by the time you get to the end of the game, you're accepting the fact that there's fireworks and this tremendous ending because it's a fantasy film.
It's a fantasy
really,
film.
Really, for baseball people.
Baseball, out of all the sports, baseball seems to lend itself the best to the silver screen. It's the most romantic of games.
I agree, 100%. Now, because of that, I wanted to ask you about other movies that came out in the 1980s that are baseball-centric. I'm curious. I know you've probably seen them.
I'm sure.
How would you compare this to Eight Men Out, which has the theme of baseball players throwing a big game? So there is some overlap.
I haven't seen Eight Men Out.
You haven't? Okay. It's the one about
the
White Sox, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Have you seen, of course, you've seen Field of Dreams. You've seen that.
Yeah, one of my favorite. Always in my top five movies.
Okay. How does it stack up to this?
This is more of like the superhero style story.
Okay.
Where Field of Dreams is more the underbelly connection to the game that is hard to explain. And the more the family and again, father, son, because I think that always translates into baseball.
Agreed. And then a movie that I thought was way overrated at the time, but for some reason it has stood the test of time and popularity. That is Bull Durham.
I think that's the most realistic.
Really?
I think the baseball scenes, the minor league jumping from stadium to stadium, it just, for me, that's the one that feels most like this is a real baseball movie.
Okay. But of those, would you put, I imagine that you would put at the very front of the list, Field of Dreams.
Yeah.
Do you put this ahead of Bull Durham?
Oh, this might go, this would go ahead of Bull Durham.
Okay.
This, as much as I really enjoyed The Natural, but this is, I've watched it one time, where Bull Durham I've seen multiple times. And Field of Dreams and Major League, I've seen 50 times each. So those go up into my number one and two.
If you take the time to watch this a couple more times, and it's really,
it would probably get there.
It's worth that. It has that value to watch it a few times.
My biggest knock with The Natural is there's too much off baseball stuff going on that is unnecessary to the story.
Again, and that's all set up in that long exposition up front. I mean, I know they tie all the loose ends at the end, but almost too much.
Well, his dad dies at the beginning.
Right.
Which I get it. You're baseball father son. That's right. Good.
Mm-hmm.
But then you have a quick mention where he quickly mentions it to Iris.
Yep.
And then at the end you get the catch. Mm-hmm. And that's the only references to it. The whole the murderer that's going on killing athletes.
Yeah.
Unnecessary.
I agree. There has to be a better way to have him have a shady past that doesn't involve like when they in last week's episode when we talked about Yankee Doodle Dandy. And if they find evidence that that Johnny Jones is innocent, they're going to shoot a skyrocket into the sky.
Right.
And it's a lame plot device. Well, it's that's rushed. All it is.
And that's the thing is all of these weak points,
all
of this off the field stuff was rushed. Yeah. All the baseball scenes, they took their time. They showed him hitting the ball for batting practice. They showed 5 or 6, 7 hits.
Did you feel that
you get one shot and then it goes, the scene ends. And it's like, wait, what just happened?
Did you feel that the baseball scenes had the momentum and speed and sort of rate of real baseball? Because they take their time.
They speed it up a little bit, but no, it was perfect. The baseball scenes were what made this great. And why people call it the greatest baseball movie has nothing to do with the murder or the gambling plot.
Yeah.
It's about the baseball.
Were you worried that they would occasionally mention teams that didn't exist?
I was not worried because I know that happens all the time because of licensing deals.
Okay, but I did.
They used real teams except for the Knights.
Well, I think that there was another team I didn't recognize, but I could be wrong. I mean, there's a lot of talking in this movie. Okay, so the closing finale with the fireworks and all of that comes from the busted lights.
Yes.
It all builds to this. And again, it is required amazing amount of suspension of disbelief. Do you feel that the ending was over the top or did they keep it in their pants enough to give you a good ending but not go too far?
The ending was perfect. I was shocked that that was the ending of the movie because that's the one scene I know.
Yeah.
So it's like I didn't realize that was coming at the very end.
Yeah.
But I thought the ending was perfect. It closed out the baseball story for me. It just made me sit there and be like, so why was she trying to murder people? What was going on?
Yeah,
it left questions about some of that stuff. But as far as closing out the story of Roy Hobbs, it was perfect.
Maybe in the novel, he explains more of why she was killing people and then Roy Hobbs loses.
Probably so.
Were you emotionally attached to the movie at all?
Because
they really do. They hit on all the points. You got lost love. You've got old people. You have baseball, parents and kids. Unless you could put in a sick dog, they've hit everything.
I think the pacing of the movie and the jump scenes made it tough for me to really be emotionally attached as much as I was enjoying it. There's little things where I would enjoy, like I love when Pops went to the water fountain and it still wasn't fixed.
Oh, he said decent little drink of water.
Like where it's like there's many scenes from this movie where I love and that pulls me in.
Mm-hmm.
But overall, I could never be pulled in emotionally, like caring about the story because of all these other random things.
Also, the fact that, you know, since Roy Hobbs is essentially a man of mystery for 95% of the movie, hard to sort of grab onto his emotional journey. Although I did get a little misty when he's playing ball with his son. That's just beautiful.
Yes. And that's where I go back and like, this was the first baseball movie. This was made before all those others.
Right.
So the fact that they got the dad, let's have a catch scenes covered there, which hits so hard in Field of Dreams.
Right.
And you've got the baseball stuff that's going all together. And the whole, it's funny to see how this has affected other movies because the save the team by winning takes you to Major League in 1989 as well, where that's got the same kind of plot point. It's really just the murderer guy, the murderer lady.
The murderer gives you some trouble. Now, the other thing I wanted to ask you is, and I'm probably, this is dangerous. Have you ever seen Pride of the Yankees, the Lou Gehrig movie with Gary Cooper?
I have a long, long time ago.
It's a really good movie. The baseball is pretty good in it. The story is great. Acting is typically over the top stuff. But the thing that separates that from this is Pride of the Yankees was honored with many, many awards. It was a very popular movie, I think 1942, but it's hokey. It is so hokey, very pat, very, you know, all the tropes are there. There is not a point in The Natural that I feel it's hokey. I think it's very pure.
Yeah, I agree. I agree with you. I think it hits all those baseball cliches, but it hits it as like we're the first baseball movie, and you're hitting the same one. Right. I wrote down that girls love the long ball because it's like that. You still see that in movies today. You still see that in real life. Mm-hmm. That the kid hitting the home run gets the attention of the lead ladies.
And also this movie, and I thought more about this when I watched it this week than I had before. It is, like so many movies, amazingly predictable. I mean, it is so, I mean, you could tell the story. I mean, I did two pages, but you could tell the story in three sentences. But there, the turns that there are a couple curveballs, get it? Baseball pun. But there are, that is sort of a surprise. The fact that
the guy, Bump Bailey dying, surprise.
That's a very big surprise. Yes. Almost like Bump Bailey pissed off the director or something.
Yes.
Because it was awfully sudden. But the whole notion of a guy who comes back when he's too old to play ball and wins the championship and saves the team, that's as old as silent films. It's just the hero stepping in and fixing it. I just wonder why in this movie it works so well, because it is just, the plot is so standard, but it really sucks you in.
I think it's baseball. I think baseball sets the tone that's perfect for that.
Really?
Where there's enough other things going on with, and the ball movement that it lays a good foundation where you have an active thing going on all over the picture while you're telling this story inside of it.
As a movie that is set in the 1930s, and it does a wonderful, evocative job of it. I mean, right down to the ads in the stadium. I mean, look with pretty intense eyes. For example, like in the newsreels, the microphones were right. A lot of times they'll cheat on that. They did everything in this movie, period flavor, is right. Did any of it make you want to even take a few weeks to go back to 1939 and watch some baseball back then?
No, it makes me want to watch this again. I do. This is the first time where we've seen a movie where I'm like, I want to watch it again.
Okay.
Now that I know the plot line.
Because there's no shot clock, you know, back then, or no pitch clock. So the games would be a lot longer back then. But I think
they were shorter though.
The whole notion of this movie and the feeling of this movie, take the murdering woman out of it. It's what I love to see in a motion picture. And in a modern movie, you can't often capture it. And again, in an older movie, it's too hokey. This is a magical capture of America in 1939, I think. And you get to see a little bit of New York City. You get to see some of the cities, and it's just it's really splendid to look at. I really think so.
I totally understand why for many people it's one of their favorite movies. It works.
Do you have any other complaints or things about it that you dislike?
The murderer. Okay.
Yeah, that's the whole thing. Yeah.
Why? Why was she killing people? We don't know, because they're the best.
It is.
Yeah. What is? How does that help anyone? Is someone paying her to do it? Is it? Is there someone who doesn't want these super? It's superhero-ish, and I guess that's why they did the silver bullet, because that's how you kill mythological characters.
But it is.
It made no sense.
It is a lazy, lazy plot trope to have that in there that they can, you know, put it. It kind of comes together at the end, but not really. You know.
Again, no, it was lazy just to, we have to get rid of him for 15 years.
Yeah.
What do we do?
And what if he'd been hit by a train?
Well, no, but he could have gotten, someone tried to mug him and he gets in a fight and he ends up getting framed as a bad guy, something like that.
I like that.
There's better ways to get to this point.
All this time, Josh, all you want to do is take money out of Barbara Hershey's pocket. You just don't want Barbara Hershey to work. Okay.
No, not that plot. They could come up with a better way to get her.
So I got to ask, out of a possible 10, how many Wilford Brimley mustaches do you give this movie?
Oh, it's an 8.
It's an 8?
It's an 8. This is my favorite movie we've done so far.
Okay, I will agree with you on an 8. It might have been a 9 before this most recent watch, but the exposition, all of that stuff in the front, they make it matter, but it's just, I'm not invested in it.
No, and I love the scene of him carving and creating Wonder Boy.
I like that too.
But there's no explanation about it. Why?
No.
Why
no.
is it called Wonder Boy? Why there's stuff missing there. And that's my biggest problem with the movie, is there's holes missing.
Yeah, and I do feel that so we agree at 8 each. The character that's based on Babe Ruth, the Whammer.
Yes.
I think that is almost like stunt casting. I mean, I know that it's a big part of the plot that he was a great player, But to put him against Babe Ruth in a county fair, that seems that's another weak plot point.
It is. And because, it was such good casting that you knew exactly what they were doing.
Yeah,
you knew,
I agree.
You knew, oh, that's Babe.
I agree. All right. So 8 for each of us. What will be our movie next week for week 4, Josh?
It can't be as good as The Natural.
Oh.
I'll guess that.
We'll see. Our movie is the 70-minute-long Duck Soup, the Marx Brothers, 1933, Paramount Pictures.
All right.
And
I've
heard feel
of this movie. I definitely have never seen this movie. I believe I am only familiar with this movie because of you and Mike O'Mara and Don and Mike, and that's it.
I think that you will enjoy this one, but then I always say that, don't I?
is the Marx Brothers?
Yeah, and it's perfectly easily streamable.
Is there speaking in the Marx Brothers movies?
Yes, it's not a silent film at all. It's 1933. As a matter of fact, the wordplay and the music are probably what make it as great as it is.
So we're going back to 1930s.
1933. So, folks, it's streamable everywhere for a pittance, or if you're like me, you have it on Blu-ray. Before next week on Hicks, Nicks, Sticks, Picks, we want you to watch Duck Soup so you can watch it with us. Josh, thank you very much. This was as fun as I hoped it would be.
This was great. I'm concerned about Duck Soup, but we'll get to that next week.
At least it's half the length of this week's movie.
That's a win.
It is. I took family friends to a theater to see it, and they said when it was over, that's it? I said, yeah,
okay.
It's 69 minutes.
Good.
I'm in. All right. This has been Hicks, Nicks, Sticks, Picks, a service of the Mike O'Mara Show. Make sure you check out MikeO'MaraShow.com. And, of course, our own website, HicksNicksSticksPicks.com. Make sure you spell it right. Thank you, Josh.
Thank you. Go visit our socials. And let Mike know you love this show.
Yes, and that you love the title. And also tune in next week when we're back to black and white. Talk to you then, everybody.
Hicks, Nicks, Sticks, Picks, a podcast about Rob's movies with Rob Spuak and Josh Sroka.